Okay, everybody, it's 1 o'clock. You know what that means? It means it's time for the Mastery Teach Call, the Mastery Let's Grill Genie Call. So get your questions ready. Press star zero. Genie will be on the call to answer any and all of your questions about raising money, deal analysis, property management, anything and everything about the multi-millions boot camp that you might have just attended, the immersion training, private money. She knows it all. We'll have Jermaine here too. And myself, this is Jeff Lindahl, and we're ready to kick this call up. So, Jeannie, you ready to start?
I am. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful day here in Boston. It's a little bit muggy, but sunny, and we love that. We love the sun. So, welcome all new Mastery students from Orange County, California. They just finished up the boot camp last weekend. Let me give a reminder for the UP9 is July 28, 29, and 30. It is a week from this Friday. It kicks off. So there's still time to get your seats if you need to. Call the office. The number is 781-878-7114. And Alice will answer the phone and direct you to the right person. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm getting a little static on the call. So this happened last week, and the operator was able to fix it. And hopefully that will happen this week as well. So we're going to roll right into our high five for this week. Christy Brooks, Allie Negus, and Forrest Jenks purchased a property for $12 million in 2016, did some work on the property, and was able to get a HUD refinanced appraisal for $20 million last week. Wow, that's pretty incredible. And they currently own 1,500 units, and they will be at this year's UP9. So when you see them, congratulate them. They're doing fantastic. I just want to give one more little note. Multifamily Millions, we have Tammy and the crew heading out to Charlotte, North Carolina this weekend. We have the previews going on in Seattle, Washington with Tyler and the crew this week. And for the immersion trainings, we have Jeff heading out to San Francisco. So if you're going there or you're wanting to know about that, just call about the office and we'll help you out and let you know where they're going to be. Okay, another high five I'm going to have this week is Carl Withers is closing at the University of Georgia, a $6 million deal. And Carl owns multiple units. I don't even know how many, maybe up to 3,000 or more. And he also will be at UP9, so you can kind of pick his brain on how he finds these deals and gets them closed so that you can be just like that. Any questions that we can answer right now, operator?
No, there's no one in the queue yet, so you have to press star zero to get in the queue.
Okay, I have a few questions that were sent over. The first one is from Tricia Coffey. Hi, if I am entering a partnership with one person on a property and I brought the deal, there is no acquisition fee, so is there a finder's fee, and what is the typical finder's fee amount? Well, if they're putting up all the money and you brought the deal, I would claim a 50-50 split on the project, and you stay in the project until it's sold. Other than that, typically it would be a 3% finder fee, somewhat equal to a broker's fee. I have quite a few questions from John Giannone, so I'm going to answer those, and then we'll see if there's anybody else waiting in the queue. The first question is, does the assigned sponsor receive any percentage of the acquisition fee? Typically, it's half of your half. Number two, in raising funds from investors, is 20% of the purchase price the goal and finance 80%, or is more money than 20% better? So it depends on what the lenders are giving you for the loan terms. 20% is good, but you will also need to raise out-of-pocket costs, such as earnest money deposits, CapEx figures. If you're doing a syndication, the attorney fees are really expensive, utility deposits. There's a lot of out-of-pocket costs that you have to consider when you're raising the money, and those monies are raised from your investors, and they are given back to them when you close out the deal entirely. Three, if the sponsor puts no money into the purchase, does he or she receive any part of the rent roll? How does the sponsor earn his money? The sponsor actually is the managing member of the property. He or she will get half of your half on everything. If you can co-sponsor a deal, you can negotiate that so that if you can sponsor more than half of the deal, maybe you give them 10% or 15% of the deal. But they sign off on all loan documents. They basically are equal managing partners to you. So they earn their money the same way you do, out of the rental income. And depending on the carve-out of the property, if it's a 35-65 split, 65 going to the investors, they will take a portion of your 35%. Number four, how is the investor's money protected? Well, it's got a non-recourse loan, hopefully, and it's protected by you taking care of the property, making sure everything is run properly, and that your property management company is raising rents and lowering your risk as far as, you know, too many rentals coming due at the same time. But being a good property manager, that is how you're going to lower the risk to the investor. Can you explain the 16% annualized long-term gain, the 8% return on rent collections? Well, we don't do like a 16 annualized long-term gain. That's not how we do our properties. How we do it is we do an annualized rate of return. So if you are giving investors 8% in year one, 9% year two, 11% year three, and 12% year four, you add up those numbers and that equals 40. Depending on the carve-out of the deal, assuming it's a 50-50 split, you add the 50% to the 40% and you get 90. And then you divide that by the amount of years you're holding the property, and that gives you a 22.5 annualized rate of return. I've never heard of long-term gain on a property. So that is, I think it's a mistake in the terminology. You heard incorrectly. And those were all from John Giannone, and I hope I answered them as best I could. Operator, do we have any questions?
Yes, we actually have one question so far. Before I go to the question, I just wanted to remind for those who just joined, if you want to ask a question, please press star zero. Start with your question, please. First question comes from Cynthia. Cynthia, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Cynthia Hurd with Center Management down in Texas. How are you?
I'm doing well. So you didn't get the property that we talked about?
Well, I didn't, but then I talked to a property management that I had left a message for, and when she and I talked, she gave me some different numbers to work with, so I went back and made some adjustments and kind of got my numbers right. And I had a feeling the broker might have been hedging a bit on the offers he was receiving. So I didn't offer what he was asking, but I did come in a little bit under. And I emailed the broker to say, is this even, you know, would your seller be willing to even look at this? And he said, yeah, why don't you go ahead and send that over? So I did. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I had to have a glass of wine last night. No.
Today.
Hey, so on these LOIs, I'm using Dave's LOI, that template that's out there. You know, I've changed it with my information. I've noticed on a lot of the brokers that are putting information out that are asking for LOIs, they've added a few lines to it, and I want to make sure that I know what to put in those blanks. So, you know, we're putting in purchase price, earnest money, feasibility period, and closing date. They're asking for description of debt equity source.
Right.
And then a summary of buyer's qualifications and evidence of financial ability to close. So
right. This is the new thing that's come about. I don't feel it is just directed to you, because it's not.
Okay.
Everyone is getting the same thing. So you have to realize that brokers only get paid when they close a deal.
So they're
just ensuring that you have the qualifications necessary to get a loan and who the lender would be, and then what kind of deals you've closed in the past, sort of like a resume that they can say, oh, well, this person definitely could be in the limelight, because they've got to sell it to the seller that you're a potential. And they don't want to waste their time if you have no credibility whatsoever. And that's where the sponsorship comes in, because if you don't have the credibility, the sponsors do.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry about that.
Because as a newbie,
I don't like that word newbie. I know I don't like the word newbie, because I think you have a skill set that is second to nobody, and just calling yourself a newbie because you haven't closed a multifamily deal gives you a description that you know nothing. And so don't use that word.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
You know a lot. Okay?
Okay. Great, Jeannie. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie, it's Mark Dupuy from Ottawa. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. How are you? Thank you for the compliments. I appreciate that.
Quite welcome. Love to hear it. I have a quick question.
You got to speak into the phone, buddy. I can't hear you.
I've got a question regarding an underwriting that we're doing for a 64 unit in North Carolina. I've got a purchase price of $2 million, and it's a 70s vintage building, and the units have never been touched, so it's kind of like...
Mark, I'm sorry to interrupt. It might be my hearing, but you are like fading in and out. Can you stand in a different location?
How's this? Is this any better?
That's so much better, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. I think it was my headset.
Okay.
So we're analyzing this deal in North Carolina, and I worked out the numbers. I put in some they've never updated their units, so I put in a $3,500 budget for each of the units to be brought up to, you know, modern day standards and get rid of the shag rug and all the funky colored toilets and all that kind of stuff. So I put that in my total cost other.
Mm-hmm.
And to make the numbers work at 12% on year one, I came up with a purchase price of $2 million.
Okay.
Now, when I was talking to Don about it this morning, he says, hey, there's your $2 million, but then you got another $400,000 on top of that for all the renovations. But when I kind of looked at the spreadsheet, I see that when I add numbers into that closing cost other, it affects the return. So I was kind of thinking that number's already factored in to the overall purchase price. Am I mistaken on that, or?
Closing costs other is factored in, and it will change your rates of return down at the bottom. So
right.
your cash and cash return, when you put numbers in the closing costs other, it's really replacing monies that you will need for CapEx. Now, you could
right.
ask
so
the seller for a 3% repair.
Yeah, and I've done that.
Okay.
But I wasn't following the logic so much with him, because he was saying $2 million purchase and then another $400,000 for the repairs. But the repairs are already factored into that $2 million, correct?
The repairs are in your closing costs other?
Yeah, they're
right?
there.
It's in the money that you're going to raise from the investors. Maybe he doesn't realize that. It's not factored into your $2 million price. You're still going to offer $2 million, but the money that you're going to raise from the investors will include all of the repair costs that you're going to need.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm on the same. Okay. All right.
It's probably just a terminology thing with him.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Because he thought, okay, $2 million to purchase and then another $400. I thought, well, hold on a second. I think that $400 is already factored in to the closing cost of it. So I just wanted to make sure
right.
I wasn't making
it. It's money that you're going to raise from the investors, and I'd rather raise more money than you really need and have it in there just in case something pops up. Because if you don't have the money to get the work done, how are you going to get the allowance back from the bank?
Yep, I agree. Well, I'm at the point right now. We just put in an LOI, so I'm hoping that they accept our LOI, and then we can move on to the next phase of raising the funds.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yep. Perfect. Thanks, Jeannie.
Okay, Mark.
I'll see you next week.
Yep.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have a couple of more questions that were sent over. One came over on the fax. This is from Bill Savisky. His question is regarding UP9. As someone who is brand new to the group and will be attending for the first time, how should I approach this event? I hear there will be plenty of networking opportunities, and aside from bringing a lot of business cards, how should I prepare for this event? I do plan on looking for sponsors and investors or partners. However, does it make sense to look for other individuals focused on similar markets that I am looking into to forge partnerships? If so, over the years, what is the overall success rate for these types of groups? Most of the stories that I hear are about individuals. Please offer your advice. Well, number one, it isn't really about individuals. It's about partnerships that they've formed, but the key player is the one we talk to the most. Personally, I would be building a team to work with if it was me. So this is definitely a relationship business, and you're going to need team members as you go forward. So you're going to be looking for a broker, a lender, a property management company, a CPA firm and an accountant, an attorney, as well as an SEC attorney if you're syndicating, an inspector, appraiser, and a contractor. Those people are part of your team moving forward, and no matter what area they're in, they're going to stay with you no matter where you invest. So you will meet all of these people. Some of them will be in the exhibitor room, but as a whole, just talking to people, doing the speed networking, you're really going to get educated on the best people to work with. And always ask for stats, how many deals they've closed, where they lend. Those are kind of questions and people that I would want on my team should I be buying a multifamily property now or in the near future. Do you want to add anything to that, Jeff?
That was really good, Jeannie.
It's an ounce of preparation, you know.
Right.
So you don't want to add anything else. Okay.
No.
All right. So I have another question.
Oh, how to prepare?
Fred.
I'll tell you how to prepare for the UP9, right? Go there and be ready to network, okay? You're going to have business cards. You're going to be, if you have a deal, if you're in a market, know what market you want to be in. So just be ready to, and then at the end of the day, you want to get all your contacts and put them in a nice organized Rolodex so you know who the people are. If you have a business card and you don't have it developed yet, have a business card with your picture on it so it'll help people identify who you are because you're going to meet so many people during this UP9. Jermaine will be the cop there, so if you see the cop, he'll point out who to network with. Right, Jermaine? Is he muted out or is he on the line?
Yes, sir.
That's right, you know. So Jermaine will say he'll know who to see, where to be, and stuff like that all throughout the day. So, Jermaine,
also
you want to add anything
business
to networking at the UP9?
I probably would tell you to bring at least 12 to 1,300 business cards because there's going to be so many people there, and sometimes people lose them. And so you want to have enough to pass out to everybody that's going to be there.
And for everyone you give out, you collect one. If they don't have one, make them write their information on a piece of paper so that you can add it to your database. The other thing is you want to make sure that your business cards can be written on the back. So they want to have a matte finish, not a glossy finish, because you're going to want to make comments on the business cards you collect, and people are going to want to do the same for you. And that's something that we teach everybody is make a note, you know, so that you can identify where you want to put them in your Rolodex. Are they property managers? Are they appraisers? Are they people that are doing business in the same market you want to do business? Do they have a special skill set that you want to attract to? You want to make notes on the back of everything. And if they have money, you want to put a dollar sign on the back of all of those business cards. That's how I raised $150 million for Dave. I collected business cards and I put dollar signs on the ones I was going to reach out to. And then I went about getting my accredited investor forms on all the ones I had dollar signs on. It was very effective. Okay, I have another question from Freddie Marin. The instructor said that when they acquire a property, instead of buying a new title insurance policy, they spoke to the insurance carrier and asked for a special endorsement to the existing policy that would extend coverage to them as new owners. By doing so, they would save a lot of money. I would like to know the name of that endorsement. I think it is called First Right of Assignment or something like that. Well, I call it an umbrella policy, which will take care of all of your policy, all of your properties under the same umbrella, which reduces the cost because you're not going out there and buying new coverage for every single property. You're going to just include them. You may also want to ask your property management company if you don't have any other properties, if you can be under their umbrella, which will reduce your insurance costs as well. You want to add anything on that one, Jeff?
Yeah, well, you want to check with your insurance broker anyways when you start building your teams and find out what they do because they're the ones that are going to be engaged right at the very beginning, well, when you start looking at the letter of intent. So if it's a strategy that they're aware of, then go with it. If not, then you have to see. What are you really trying to build a relationship with insurance brokers in that market so they can tell you what to carry, carry on your thing. So if you do that, if you're doing it like, almost like an umbrella or an assignment into another policy, like, what are they covering? What are they, you know, you have to really like look to see if you have the coverage that you really want. So I Buyer beware.
Any questions, operator?
No, Jeannie, we don't have any questions at the moment.
Okay. It must be because we switched the day from yesterday to today. Luckily, I have a few more questions I can read off. So, what's the most efficient way to find deals in emerging markets that are out of state? Well, you want to go to LoopNet and pull down packages from there in the area that you want to invest in. Make a list of the brokers and find commonality with them so that when you're talking to them, you can let them know the types of properties that you're looking to buy in. You can also go to reis.com. They do market and property intelligence, and you can search areas that they've done research on and see where you can get the most leverage. Like Dave puts out an emerging market list, and we do that quarterly. And he also does a top 10 list. You can call me. I can send that to you. But it's important if you're picking a market that there's new job growth and that you've contacted the Economic Development Committee and gotten what's going on in that market that will drive you to get more rentals for the properties that you're going to buy in. So if there's job growth, that's a big indication. And the Millikan Institute does a ton of research on best performing cities. And then you want to go to Marcus and Millichap, C.B. Richard Ellis, ARA, which is American Realty Advisors. They do extensive demographic information on every area of the country. So I would say that's a good place to start. So out of these types of questions, I can find other questions to ask, but if anybody has anything, they can press *0, get into the queue, and ask questions. Jermaine, do you have anything to share at this moment?
No, Jeannie, I have no questions for you. Sorry about that.
Okay, that's all right.
And Jeannie, we have questions now. Are you ready for the next one?
Okay, that's good. I'm ready.
Okay, up next we have Jacob. Jacob, please go ahead.
Hello, Jeff and Jeannie. This is Jacob from Sacramento, California. How are you?
Good, Jacob.
We're well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a little hot, but bearing with it out here in the valley. I have a couple questions for you. Number one is I'm noticing that when I'm speaking with some of the brokers and receiving some packages, the sellers are choosing not to respond to a lot of the offers that are being submitted because of the fact that they want the possible buyer to go out and view the property before accepting any offers. And the properties that we're looking at are in Tucson, Arizona. So how would you suggest going around that what are some advice you should suggest in that situation?
Yeah, that's interesting. They're asking you to view the property before they look at an offer.
Before they accept the offer, they want someone to go view the property. Because apparently there's a lot of offers being submitted from Phoenix investors, and so there's just prefer people to go view the property before they accept the offer. So.
Oh, Jeff, how would you answer that?
Oh, are they giving you the financials? How do they look? Do they look clean?
So far, yes, on some of them. I still have some questions on them. But I just received a package yesterday from one of the brokers, so I'm in the process of underwriting that one.
Okay, so the property that you're looking for, that the owner wants you to find, is this just a general question of what you're doing? Are you looking at
a
specific deal that the seller wants you to find out on? Oh, it's a general question?
Mm-hmm.
Well, typically what we do is, like, when we're looking in markets outside, in an emerging market, that's part of our schedule 3 days. What we do is we fly down for the property that we have under agreement, and then we, from one broker, and we're working with two other brokers. So when we're working with the two other brokers, we get a list of properties that they have that are coming up on the market, and we have pictures taken in front of the sign. So if in case one of those sellers is the type that says, like, yes, and they want to make sure that they've come down and saw the property, we have a picture of us next to the property. Now, if we have the property under, that's what, the reason why I was asking you the property, if you had clean financials. Now, if you have clean financials, they're coming back and it looks like the property is good, you could take a chance at sending a property management company that you've been talking to in the area. What we do, and I always suggest, when you're picking an emerging market, you want, one of the things is like, how far away is it? Is it an easy flight to get to? But where do you have boots on the ground? If you have boots on the ground, if you have a relative that lives there in that area, they can drive by that property, and technically they've seen the property, but if they have any type of, like, not even like real estate background, if they're knowledgeable at all, where you can train them, just tell them, hey, just drive around the outside of it, go there at night, don't open your doors, because you know what happens at night, Jeannie, you know? All the crazies come out.
Yeah.
So there's, like, different things. So in general, if they tell you, so that's the answer to, like, that. Did that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just have to say, like, you'll get a seller that, nope, and it's a great deal, and you'll just have to fly down there. But when you do fly down, right, you're going to have a plan. Like we have on the Mastery site, flying down on a Friday night, all the stuff that you should be doing and who you should be meeting with on Saturday and Sunday. So you are flying down there, but it's like you're going to get the most out of that going down to do it. Because some sellers are stubborn, like I said, and it could be a really, really good deal, and you have to say, oh, man, I have to fly down and look at that. But
yeah, I mean, if the numbers are really impressive and you're really happy with the numbers and you got a cash-on-cash return that's, you know, livable, and you know you can get investors in the deal, you may even want to hire, you know, an appraiser to go out there and just walk the property for you. Pay him $100 and say, you know, go out there, walk the property for me, let me know what you find. And then, you know, you're not asking to go unit by unit, but just walking the grounds to see. It's like eyes on the ground, really. Or you could call me and see if we have a student that's nearby that you could pay to drive over and take a look.
Yeah, that's true.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. And a second question is, if when we take over the property, do we always switch property management, or do we continue using the same property management if they're performing well?
Well, if they're performing well and the grounds are good, I would keep them along. But if you have a credit loss on that property that is higher than 1% or 2%, because they're not raising rents on time, if you're looking at the rent roll and you're seeing 10 or 12 people vacating at the same exact time, or they've got a bunch of people on month to month and they're not collecting, I mean, those are real red flags to me that they need to go. So if the rents in the marketplace are $1,000 a month and they're only charging $850 and they have the same criteria as the people across the street, there's something going on with that property. Maybe they had a murder. You've got to do research and see. And I would call the Apartment Owners Association and find out what you can on that property. But if they're doing a good job, there's no reason to change them unless, you know, they're just not collecting rents on time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. All right, that answers my question. Thank you so much for your guys' time and knowledge. I appreciate that. And Jeff, look forward to seeing you. Uh-huh.
Are you going to be at the Immersion this weekend?
Yeah, I'll see you this weekend. And you said Thursday night is a networking night?
Thursday night. That's for the UP9. It's like Thursday night is a networking night. Yeah. All weekend long is networking at Immersions. We network all weekend long. Yeah.
Yes, sir. All right, I'm
ready.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Right, Jeannie?
Okay,
weekend long at the Immersion.
All weekend. You changed the hours from when I was doing it with you.
All right, change the hours, right? Because we like to network when we're on the West Coast at a beach where there's a sunset with live band playing. And if I end at 5, I don't make it to sunset, right?
It
takes too long with that traffic. So that's how we end at 4.
But
we start earlier. Oh, no, we start earlier at 7:30. Because I realized when I started at 8:30, people weren't coming in until 9 o'clock. And, like, by that time, half the day's gone.
I got it.
Right. Righty.
Okay, up next we have Martin. Martin, please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Martin was just at the San Diego. Martin, what do you think about that sunset that we saw?
Yeah, I can attest to that. That was great. Networking on the beach, right on the sand. With some drinks.
Yeah.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Martin was just up
in
San Diego right now. Martin liked the hour change, right? You didn't mind coming in a little bit earlier, right? To be able to and actually, they made me stay late too. So
we came early and stayed late.
Yep.
How you guys doing, Jeannie, Jermaine, Jack?
Excellent, thank you.
Good.
So I was so fired up after Jeff's training, immersion trading. I started calling my broker's list, and I was actually able to talk to a broker, and the conversation went very well, just following the script from Don and from Dave. But she, at one point, she did ask me how many properties I have and where the properties are, and you know, so I had to tell her obviously that. I don't have any property, and this is you're going to be my first property. Is there any kind of along the lines of brokers asking us on our letter of intent for more proof that we're able to close on deals? Is there any way to get around that question as a beginner without any property, without discrediting myself?
Well, I first would say, if somebody asked me that, I'm going to say, you know, this is my first multifamily property. However, I'm working with a seasoned investor that's been buying properties for years, and they're grooming me to be part of their lineup and see if it shuts her up.
All right.
You know, everybody needs a chance, and if you're part of the sponsorship and you tell me where the property is, I'll give you people that own properties in that same marketplace. And as long as you've done your homework and taken the test and you're ready to rock and roll, we'll find you a sponsor that can qualify.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. Perfect. I'll go ahead and do that. I'll keep at it.
Yep.
Thanks, Jeannie.
You're welcome.
Oh, see ya. Guess he didn't like my answer.
Were you sleeping?
Was I? Never. All right.
Okay. Up next we have. Up next we have Robin. Robin, please go ahead.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Excellent.
Good.
How are you?
Great. How are you, Robin?
I'm calling from California.
You are.
Just to mention a note on the what to do about seeing a property. We are actually working on a deal, and we had contacted, of course, some property managers, and the day that we needed that to happen, one of the property managers went over there for us, which was fantastic. So we were able to get
photos. That's something I would do as well.
Excellent. Yeah.
So that was awesome. My question is, for this upcoming event, the partnering, what is the best way to present a deal to get more? I mean, because we have a sponsor and we have a couple investors, but of course we're going to need more to close the deal because it's a $7 million property with 177 doors or something.
So the best way is to present it to the Shark Tank. So there's certain criteria that I will need, the underwriting, a two-page summary on the property, and why you think it makes it a good deal. It's called a deal submission form. And if you give me your email address, I will send that out to you, and then you send it back to me, and we'll put you in the limelight.
Okay, perfect. It's do you want it now? It's Harper Holdings.
Yeah.
@gmail.com.
Okay. So I have room for 10 people to present, and I'm up to number 4 that have sent me all of the documents. So if you're interested in being in front of the Sharks, you need to send me those documents. I did email everybody that was in the program or signed up for UP9 last week, and I got 4 fully completed applications. So if you can get yours in, you'll be number 5.
Awesome. Okay.
What's your email address, Jeannie, for other people that are listening that right now are going to start flooding you with
it's
deals?
JEANNIE at rementor.com. So it's JEANNIE, like in the bottle, at rementor.com.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And good luck on that deal.
Thank you. Yeah,
but, you know,
pretty
when
awesome.
When you present to the Shark Tank, there'll be 5 or 6 sharks up there. When you present to them, you're presenting in front of the whole 1,000 people. So even if they don't bite on your deal, there's going to be people in the audience that are going to chase after you to get into your deal.
Okay.
So don't worry about it if they don't bite.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Right on. See you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, up next we have Ron. Ron, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Ron from Los Angeles area, and I'm about to make a site visit prior to making an offer, so it'll be a tour of the property with the broker. Is there one of the competencies, or are there any materials you'd refer me to know how to best handle that site visit?
What size property is what size is the property, Ron?
100 units.
And is it in your local market, or are you flying out to see it?
I'm driving to it. It's a ways away.
You're driving to it? Okay. Let's see. You're just going up there. You're just going to drive up for the sole purpose of seeing this one property. And you're going to drive in. You're not staying overnight, are you? You're just driving up and driving back.
I can stay with friends, and I'm going to try to get as much done. I want to see comparable properties. I want to drive the neighborhood, all of that. So I may be overnight or.
Okay, yeah, so go up to, I think it's competency number 21, site visits. Go up there. There's, like, a good 3-day plan. You can, like, reduce it down to 2 days if you want, but there's some, like, great ideas of who you should see while you're out there. You should go up to LoopNet
to trying to find out what other brokers might have deals out there? So you're going to meet with, like, a couple brokers?
And I would look around for the property management company that's taking care of that existing property, what other properties they own in that area, so you can ride around and see how they're treating their property. You know, are the grounds picked up? Do they have flowers? Do they have excellent curb appeal? Is there good signage? Do people have sheets in their window instead of, you know, everybody looking uniform in the same vertical blinds? So
Right. Those
are things that if I was going to buy a property, I would definitely be looking for, because the way they're showing this property, they're trying to sell it, you know. So they might have gotten directives from the brokers that they have to have these things done before they start showing it. But you want to see their other properties and how they treat their other properties. Are there mattresses on the side of the road? You know, sometimes they just don't treat it right. And if they have other properties and they're in deplorable conditions, you know right off the bat, they're not going to stay at your property because you're going to get rid of them.
Good point. How many units would you try to visit? Again, this would be pre-offer. It would just be the initial site visit. Should I try to get into a number of units to see them, or what's your thinking about that?
I would ask, you mean at the existing property?
Yes.
Would ask to see a one-bedroom, a two-bedroom, and you don't want to see a model. You want to see a vacant unit that they say is ready, because you want to see how they do their make-readies. Is it clean and neat? Do you see any bugs? Do you smell any odors? Because if they're showing a property that is substandard, showing a unit that's substandard, I mean, if it's a model, it's going to be in perfect condition, and that's really not an indication of how they're treating the property. And you want to make sure that, you know, when you walk into the premises, the property management company staff members are dressed uniformly. If they don't have uniforms, they at least are dressed with good attire, and, you know, they're not walking around in flip-flops and tank tops, you know.
Gotcha.
It's first impression.
Yeah. Good suggestions. Thank you.
And if you go to the Mastery website, I think Jeff said it is Competency 21, and it actually gives you a list of what you should be doing when you visit a site. So you can just download that list or print it out, and you'll have it when you arrive at the property. So.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Okay.
You're welcome.
See you in a week.
Good luck.
See you then.
All right.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
All right, so I'm really psyched about the UP9 coming up, right? Because, like, I need some strong people to help carry, like, some of Johnny's furniture down from the north end, and he has to be out by that weekend. So I figured the truck's dropping things off, right, at the UP9. We can, like, take the truck. We can look for who wants to do some good networking in the north end. Yeah, right next to Pizzeria Regina. We'll go there, move some stuff, go to Pizzeria Regina. That'd be awesome. So if you're up for it, email Jeannie. If you want to be on the crew, the move-out crew from the north end, let me know.
Jeff, you are too much. And Jeff's going to be the director. He's not going to be the mover.
What? Yeah.
Isn't Johnny's room on the third floor?
No, it's on the fifth floor. And it's the New England type of stairways where it's so steep. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you could drape them from the windows, right?
Yeah. Every time I look out that fire escape, I start yelling, Anthony! Spaghetti! Spaghetti Wednesday!
Oh, my goodness. You're too much. Well, I guess you got to make it light and humorous, right?
Yeah. So, everything's light. It's like just a table, a couple mattresses. That's about it. So.
Why don't you just leave him there? Leave him there. He can buy new. He's going to have a nice working paycheck.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's see if there's any more questions. I bet someone's dying to either ask a question or jump on the crew. So let's find out. Operator?
No, we have no questions at the moment.
All right.
All right. I have one from C. Wynn. I am on the call and running into the same situation as others. In order to obtain the financial data on a property, brokers are asking for proof of funds, financial capabilities to fund. Our program allows us to obtain sponsorships. Can you please let me know what we need to do? Well, for a proof of funds letter, you can go up to BEST, B-E-S-T, transactionfunding.com and get one or two of them. Get one with what you would offer on a property and get one with what they're asking on the property. That sometimes helps the brokers see that you have the wherewithal. And as far as having a sponsor, if you have it under contract and you call me and let me know where the property is located, what the purchase price is, and send me your underwriting so I can take just a peek at it, then I can refer you to sponsors that can assist you with getting the financials. But if you don't have the financials at all on a property, and you're just going by pro forma, know that that is another word for pretend, and they're not real numbers. So you really need to get the actual numbers on a property. So you've got to build a relationship with that broker that he trusts you and knows that you're doing the best job at, you know, analyzing and asking the right questions and build confidence in yourself that you can deliver, like you can close this deal, so that he'll give you the time of the day. You want to add anything there, Jeff?
Right on, Jeannie. You covered it all. Very good.
All right. Here's another one from Fabian and Nicole. Oh, my God. I haven't spoken to them in a long time. Hi, Jeannie. I had a couple questions related to the LOI. If you have reviewed the financials and underwritten the deal and submitted an LOI, will a buyer even consider an LOI, even if the purchase price on the LOI is much lower than they are willing to accept? Or would you say that typically the LOI price is usually the end price on the deal? Is it likely that a seller would accept a low LOI to get a buyer to negotiate, anticipating that they will still come back and raise the purchase price? Well, what I would do in that case, if your numbers are meeting the Holy Trinity, which in Dave's eyes, the Holy Trinity is a cash-on-cash return of 12, a debt coverage ratio of 1.6 or higher, and a cap rate of 8 or higher. If your numbers are reaching that with your LOI, I would submit it. And if the broker says to you, oh, this is too low, I can't submit it, ask him to keep you on board as a backup offer. Don't think that you're out permanently, because maybe other people are as smart as you and know that this property doesn't warrant a higher price. So you send in your LOI, and if the broker comes back and says it's too low, I really don't want to submit it, just ask them to keep you on board as a backup offer. They also have a second question. If you realize after the inspection or after additional due diligence that you need to pay less for the property, at what point in a deal would you renegotiate, and how do you present and document that change? Is there a specific document to use, or would an email suffice? Myself, I would call the broker up, and I would tell the broker that after our due diligence, and I would show him the information that you got from the inspector and the appraiser, that we're going to need a new roof, we're going to need this, we're going to need that, and we're going to have to offer lower on the property. And would he present this retraded price to the sellers? And if you do it in that way and you have proof that you were spending way too much on the property and it needed more work, you can ask them for a 3% repair allowance, which is allowed by law. And you also have to negotiate the price. You want to add anything there, Jeff?
Yeah. What you want to do is, like, if that does happen, usually we don't fly down to look at a property until after we've gone through the financial due diligence. When it comes on the contract, we'll send a property manager company by there just to get their overall take on the CapEx, deferred maintenance, and if they notice anything, if the roof's out gone and stuff like that. And if we've talked to the broker if we've asked them about the roofs and they didn't indicate there was any problems with it, then that's when we'd retrade, because it was something that we discovered, but we don't want to be known as a retrader. So if we discover something, we'll see what they're going to do to the property. So, makes sense?
Yeah, Dave went to Alabama to buy a property years and years ago, and he says, oh, my God, the roof looked wonderful, and everything was the way he liked it. And then he went to the coffee shop to get something to eat and struck up a conversation with a local and told him that he had just looked at a property. And the guy says, oh, did you like the paint job on the roof? Dave was totally shocked and had to go back and tell the broker that, he didn't want the property because they forged that they had a new roof on there when they actually painted it. That was a wake-up call. You learn a lot when you go through these things.
That's right.
Any other questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have one question. Last question comes from Nancy. Nancy, please go ahead.
Hi, you two. It sounds like you're having a lot of fun in Boston. So
it's always
looking forward to joining your party.
All right.
I'm like, Jeff, you're coming out here this week, I think. We're going to see you in San Francisco. So I'm in San Jose.
Well, really? Thanks
you,
for the warning.
Yeah. Hey, you're going to have so much fun. We don't have a beach, but we have a lot of fun things. Question you mentioned about a property checklist, a site visit, and I went on to look for it. And all there are on that competency section that I saw were videos, and the document said to be coming soon. So I have to do a site visit tomorrow. Is there another place I can get something like that?
It's on that competency. Did you download the PowerPoints?
I will. I didn't go through the PowerPoints. I was looking for a site visit document that I could download. Okay. I'll go through the PowerPoints.
Yeah, Nancy, if you look on Competency 21, there is a site visit document, a site visit tips. You can actually download that or print it out, and you'll have it. It tells you what you need to do when you visit a property.
Jermaine, I'm on that right now, and when you click it where it says documents, it is just a Word file. There are no documents attached to it, although it references them, and that's so maybe we can take that offline. You can, I can figure out how to do that later.
No problem. It's actually site visit tips. So if you click on that.
Okay.
And that's also.
Good. Okay. The other question I have, we're in an LOI situation where we want to issue one. They're going to close their offers here in another 24 to 48 hours. We need if we don't have a sponsor yet, but we know we'll get assigned one, do we just go forward with a confidence and go ahead and submit our LOI knowing, you guys are behind us, or do we need to wait until Jeannie or one of you look at this and say, wait till we assign you a sponsor?
Where's the property located?
It's located here in California, in the Pacifica area.
Well, we have quite a few sponsors for that area, so it's possible that it will be a shoe-in, but I don't know. There's no 101,000% guarantee that they're going to love the property,
right.
But I do have people
right.
in that area that are
because the other one we're looking at putting an offer in on one in Oakland as well. So, okay, we will submit both of those to you, and we will see if somebody falls in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Make sure you fall in love with the numbers and not with the look of the property. We want to be
in love with the numbers.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, too. And looking forward to meeting both of you.
Thanks.
Good.
Take care, Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See you Friday.
See you Friday.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Well, that's been an hour, and it's been a struggle to get people on the line to ask questions, so I think we'll call it a day here. And if you need anything or you had a burning question and you didn't want to ask it on the line, you can fax it to us at 781-878-7115, or you can email it over to me anytime, any day, I don't care when, and I'll be happy to answer it. It's JEANNIE@rementor.com. And in the meantime, you all have a great week, and we will see you on the next call. Bye now.
Bye.